This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Welcome to the Brit Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. Late night tonight, but we are here doing the Brit Zone. That's what the commitment is, listeners. So we've got a couple of things to talk about. And I don't know about you, Barry, but if we keep having to do this after 10 o'clock, we might just suffer a breakup.
We might.
Seriously, are we just another partnership? And is there a right way to breaking up?
So there's an interesting article. I think she's from Croatia, this lady, psychologist and a bridge player. There's a lot of psychology sort of focusing on bridge. And she's written this article. And I guess, does it happen to all bridge players or just most of them? Or what do you think, Maria?
I think it does. You have to start some way. I mean, I'd be interested in, does the little fire of a breakup come from?
The article's called Breaking Up the Right Way. No, she's not talking about leaving your husband. She's talking about the commentator asked her advice on how to gracefully exit a long-standing partnership when it becomes clear that the partnership has become stale. Let's just make it clear, Mariana, we're talking about a bridge partnership here.
So a partnership has become stale?
She gives us five different ways that you can approach the sticky problem, some of which are more effective than others, she said. Maybe the first one's the most dramatic one, Mariana.
Okay.
It's the fight. Something goes wrong at the table. You get upset, start to blame each other. One of you blurts out, I can't stand it anymore. I give up. Find someone else to torture.
Torture.
So she says, as elegant and fast as it may seem, breaking up in a fight has many negative consequences. Maybe that's not the best way to go, Mariana. What else has she got on her list?
A temporary split. So is that like, I want to take a break? It is. It's been borrowed by a romantic relationship can indeed be an appropriate decision if you're not really sure about the partnership, but people abuse it. A substitution for a permanent breakup. I think that's funny, just to avoid further discussion. So it's like, okay, we'll just have a break and what? You just don't go back?
Yeah, I need some space. You know, the old story, you know. And
it's not you, it's me. Is that right?
Number three could be the most common way of actually breaking up. That doesn't necessarily mean it's good or it's right. So letting it fade. And she says that she believes most partnerships die this way. Partners just start to find more and more excuses for not playing together, stop planning future events together, blah, blah. But it's still not a great way of doing it. So maybe number four is better, Mariana.
Finding someone else. Oh God.
God.
I mean, it's funny. It's only logical we have got to find someone else to play with. It's not considered immoral if you occasionally play with someone else. It's even okay to have two or three regular partners, as long as everyone's happy with this arrangement. However, finding a new partner with the express intention of getting rid of the previous one, well, that's not the way to go.
Earlier in the article, I think the author actually, she actually did this. She didn't tell her partner that she'd found somebody else, so she secretly was playing bridge in another session or maybe in another club. But all that
so she was cheating.
She was cheating on her partner. I think she might have even used a false name or something. So it was, you know, pretty dramatic. She sort of suggests this is probably the best way, but it's not one that happens very often, and that is talking it through. By far the best way.
We've got to go off to a psychiatrist now.
Yeah, marriage guidance counselling, all that sort of stuff. By far the best way to gracefully exit a long-standing partnership is to tell your soon-to-be ex-partner that you would like to split. People may say it's a cliche, but being honest in a social relationship is the way to go. Oh, God. So I'm not too sure that any of those is ideal. None of our listeners have got any ideas. What's the best or worst way you've broken up a bridge partnership? Man, I would really like to get some emails on this, Mariana.
Oh, look, we promise we won't name and shame. bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. Wouldn't it be fun? I mean, I've got a couple of examples, but I'm not going to relay mine first. I need people to send in some of theirs before I'm going to say some of mine.
I had one of them. He might be listening to this show. I had a bridge partner of a long standing, and he met a bridge player from overseas online, left the country, went and lived with her for 10 years, and that was it. That was the end of our pushback. But there was certainly no bad feeling about it. I thought, yeah, well, I couldn't really complain.
They didn't have online tournaments.
That was one way. That was probably a pretty painless way to end a bridge partnership.
Funny, funny.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Hey, welcome back, Judge Julie. We've got a couple of questions for you. We've been talking about lead out of turns, and we're going to continue down that vein today.
Mariana's got a problem, Julie.
He's terrible, isn't he? He is. He's always trying to create something out of nothing.
So Mariana's doing her learner's classes, and she's got a problem with them, and she thinks she can help Julie. And tell her what it is.
We're doing opening leads, Julie. So I just want the simplest explanation for them as to why we place the card face down. That's all. I don't want any other bones and whistles, even though there's miles of implications. Just the simplest one.
Yeah. Okay. The simplest reason of all is so that if you're led out of turn, it can be corrected and there's no penalty and no mucking about. Importantly, and this is important, once you have made that lead face down on the table, you cannot pick it back up again unless the director allows you to. So once it's been placed on the table face down, then that is the opening lead unless the director allows you to. And they'll only do that if something comes to light that should have and hadn't. So we don't need to worry about that with our beginners because that's way too complex.
That sounds good, Mariana. That's exactly what you're looking for.
Nice and simple.
The next one isn't quite so simple. It's a little bit more complicated. This listener was defending, and at some point during the hand, declarer was about to lead from their hand, which actually suited our listener. Thought, well, that's good, even though they're actually in dummy, and he knew that. They're going to lead from a hand. That'll be good. And the next thing comes a tap, tap, tapping. You know, the dummy taps on the table to say you're in dummy, partner. He wasn't happy about that, Julie, but is that okay?
Okay. Dummy is allowed to prevent an infraction occurring. So you're allowed to try to prevent the clearer leading from the wrong hand. You shouldn't go tappity tap, tap, tap on the table because sometimes if your hands are on the table, people may think that you're trying to help the clearer know what to do. This is a hangover, well, I hope. It is a hangover from years ago when occasionally people did indicate what was to be played from the table by where they placed their hand. Yep. It's just something that you're better off to sit on your hands when you're dummy than have them touching the table at all. And all you do is say, in dummy, or something like that to try and stop them leading from the wrong hand. There's another one that comes up frequently, and that is the placing of the card when you've won a trick and the clearer places it the wrong way. Dummy can say that the card has been turned the wrong way as long as the next trick hasn't been played to. The reason for that is because there's a timing with speech and action that is really hard to untangle which comes first and which comes second. So when the clearer goes to place their card down the wrong way, by the time you say you're putting it the wrong way, partner, they will have already placed it on the table. So the clarification in our regulations say that that's okay, but not if the next trick is started. So you just say really quickly, other way, partner, for tricks placed the wrong way. You cannot tell the clearer when you are dummy that they've got a card placed the wrong way at any other point. So if the clearer is suddenly looking at how many tricks they've won because they've got a big decision to make and you know they've got one the wrong way, you are absolutely not allowed to tell them at that point. You can only tell them on that trick where they have turned it the wrong way when they're putting the card down.
Man, oh man, it's a complicated job being dummy, isn't it? I mean, people say, oh, dummy's got no rights. Yeah, they have, but they can do this, but they can't do that. And if they're going to do it, they need to.
They can't do a heck of a lot. And a lot of the time, if they do it at the wrong time, they are in so much trouble. So best thing, sit on your hands when you're dummy. Well, except when you're playing the card for the clearer, I suppose. Don't put your hands on the table. Keep your hands off the table, except when you're picking up the cards to play them when the clearer has called them. You can try and stop the clearer from leading from the wrong hand by letting them know that they are in dummy or in their own hand. and you can try to stop them placing a trick the wrong way round for that trick if you're quick enough.
As for the tap, tap, tapping thing, perhaps you should get a game with Woody Woodpecker sometime, and that would be the only reason.
I've thought of one more quick one about leads. So let's say you have led out a turn and the defender says, yep, I accept it. And the other defender says, I don't. What happens?
You call the director when there's a lead out of turn, end of story. Because saying the lead's from the other hand or whatever, right, is not an acceptance of the lead. It's just pointing out there's an infraction. And when there's an infraction, you call the director. And when both people have said, then the director needs to be called because the timing of those statements is absolutely critical.
Oh, okay. So
if there is a lead out of turn, say declare a lead out of turn.
Yeah.
If someone says, I accept it, the first person to speak is the one that has decided what is going to happen.
Ah, okay. So not the one immediate to the left of the person that led out of turn.
The person that comes after where the lead was made from or is meant to have been made from can say, but when there is a lead out of turn, either defender can accept it or not accept it. And whoever says something first is the one that has made that statement.
Okay.
So you need the director at the table. And when there is a lead out of turn and you say you should be in dummy, right, you're not saying you've accepted the lead or not accepted it. You are saying that they have led from the wrong hand because you need time to call the director. And if someone leads from the wrong hand and you yell director, they all get a hell of a fright and wonder what it is that they've done that so bad. When all you want to do is just get a director to the table.
True.
And that's all, folks, if we're going to go with Hanna-Barbera for our cartoons, Barry.
I was just wondering if you were playing with Woody Woodpecker, whether you'd play splinters or not, Julie.
Oh.
That's a bit sad.
Oh, can I go now?
Yes, you can. Hey, look, I've got this other thing that I was reading. It was an article called Don't Play by the Rules by Barnett Schenken. He's out of Florida. And he makes this statement. Yeah. Players who learn bridge as a series of rules to follow strictly suffer a disadvantage compared with those who were taught general guidelines that serve as starting points for logical thought. He reckons it pays to be flexible, especially when faced with a situation or a partner who exhibits unusual characteristics. Doing lessons at the moment, Barry, we're pretty clear on what the guidelines and not so much the rules, but the basics of it. You've got to allow some flexibility there, don't you?
Yeah, I guess. Yes, you do. The partnership thing, it's just difficult to get a partnership together where both partners are agreeing and everything's on song.
But I do think you do need to have some flexibility, and I guess that's when you start talking about system. But at the beginning, it's open with 12 to 19, blah, 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 longer suit first, all of that sort of stuff. People can get the wrong idea about it. They feel that they're doing themselves wrong if they don't do that.
I was talking to the other day about somebody that's playing precision. They're probably not that familiar with playing a natural system. You know, haven't been playing for all that long, and now they want to play precision or they want to play something else. I think sometimes you're better off to try and just get the basics of the game together before you start trying to play some magical new system that's going to solve all your problems, Mariana.
Some magical new system. Blimey.
I mean, that's one of the beauties of bridge. If you want to play precision or you want to play Polish club or you want to play Ekol or you want to play... Nobody's going to stop you.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, some people just love that sort of stuff, even if they're not very good at it. Other people like me just hate it and think, oh, why would I bother wanting to be doing that?
To keep it simple is awesome. That's what I like. We have some really good questions. One of the questions at lessons tonight was, why is having an 8-card fit between the partnerships good? Another question tonight was, why is it so important to keep an eye on high card points? They're opening up some good questions tonight. They're starting to think and have a voice.
I'm telling you, anytime you've got beginners or even intermediates or anybody else, the more questions you get, easier your job is, Mariana, I think, because if one person, if just one person wants to ask a question, there's probably another half a dozen people that would like to ask that question but didn't want to because they thought they'd look silly or whatever. So it's really great when you've got participants that will ask questions.
That was good. I'm always saying, anyone got any question? And someone would say, I do. I was like, cool, what is it? When you say deny four spades, you know, like one heart, and we were talking about the bid one, no trump, and when you say deny four spades, does that mean to say that we're bidding game? I thought that was a great question.
Yeah,
but I don't have game.
The Trump response for beginners seems to create a lot of problems. You know, we said this before, that when you're teaching beginners, if they remember 30% of what you tell them, you'd be lucky. So they remember that when Trump shows 6 to 9, but they forget that it denies four spades. They don't remember that. Yep. But any time they've got 6 to 9, they bid one no trump. Even their partner's open to diamond. Even if they're 4-4 in the majors, they bid one no trump. But then some of them think, oh, yeah, one no trump, that shows 12 to 14. They forget that that's the opening bid, not the response. Put these things in the wrong place. It's a lot to learn, and it's really easy to get your wires crossed.
And I'll just share with you one of my last questions that came out tonight, and it was, Mariana, yes, Michael, where's the biscuits?
Now, do you think that the answer to that question would go into the 30% or the 70%, Mariana?
Yeah.
They might not remember what one no trump shows, but they'll remember where the biscuits are next week, I reckon.
Get your gumboots on. We're going down to the pond with Kermit.
Phenomena. Phenomena.
Hey everybody, it's just Kermit and myself. We're down at the pond, and what is the name of a male frog? Is it just a bullfrog, or is that just a big frog? So what would we be?
Oh, I actually don't know the answer to that. I don't know if there's a gender name for frogs, is there?
Whatever it is, we are berryless frog.
Yeah, well, there's less bald, certainly, when Barry's not here, if that's what you're implying.
I've got this question about leads, because we've been warping on about different types of leads from a director's point of view and a rules point of view.
Mm-hmm.
What I would like to know is, what is your opinion when you're making an opening lead? What sort of information are you trying to give? One, obviously, to your partner. And does it change in suits and no trump? So how do we come to pick our opening lead, and what type of information are we trying to relay?
Oh, my goodness. What a question, because opening leads are one of the hardest things in this game. And so to give a quick answer is quite hard. And if someone cared, I'd really like to know what it is. But, of course, when I'm talking to people about opening leads, one thing that's useful to think about is that the aims when you're leading for a suit contract and when you're leading for a no-trump contract, the aim is slightly different. When you're leading for a suit contract, the suits are controlled by the top cards and then the shortages by trumps. So the declarer has these long trumps. What you're trying to do is take those top tricks in the side suits if you can, and not give the top tricks away unnecessarily to declarer. But in a no trump contract, you're trying to establish a long suit and take your tricks before declarer does, while you've still got some control. So those are sort of the aims of the opening leads, and deciding which one to make. Well, you need to look at the auction and consider what's in your hand and what might be in your partner's hand. Sounds easy, doesn't it?
Well, welcome. We were just trying to figure out what the name of a male frog is, because we were two frogs at the pond missing the male frog. What is it? Do you know?
He's a toad.
He's a toad. So we were toadless.
Isn't a toad a different species?
No, I don't think so. You're the resident frog expert.
I said bullfrog, so we were bullless.
Yeah, he was less bull if Barry wasn't here, that's for sure.
So when you said you're fairly sure but you're not sure, is that like when you're on lead with 3-4 card suits and the bidding's gone one no trump, 3 no trumps?
Oh, that's exactly right. And I tell you what, When I'm choosing lead, sometimes I just eliminate the things I really don't want to lead and choose from what's left. You know, you'll be discussing a hand like this and say, well, you're going to avoid leading the king of spades on this hand. You don't want to lead the spade suit. And at the end of the hand, it turns out that that was the only thing that was going to take the contract light. Mary, can you give a concise answer on how to make a good opening lead? Because it's blooming hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's some guidelines, but the hand we were talking about the other day, Mariana, with 3-4 card suits where none of them had been bid and none of them particularly attractive. I mean, isn't it great when you get top of a sequence to lead? I mean, isn't that just awesome? And you look at that and you think to yourself, there's a great lead, queen of spades. That'll never be wrong. And then you find out you should.
Sorry, I have to disagree with you, Barry. Not about the never be wrong, but it's like, no, let's have the really difficult hands, because if everyone's just like, one no chump, three no chump, simple contract. No, those tough leads, that's the good stuff. That's the juicy stuff. Those hard hands, they're the ones that we go for, because the picking the king of hearts or king, queen, jack. I mean, you could do that after your first lesson.
Hang on a minute, though, Kermit. At some tables, the option won't go like that, and your partner will be on lead, and they won't know that you've got king, queen, jack. I like it to be easy and hope that the other table isn't.
My partner always leads my suit when I've got king, queen, jack. I've got good partners.
I don't believe you.
I wouldn't believe me either.
I'm sure that there are some occasions when you've had a suit headed by king, queen, jack when your partner has not led one of those. Yeah, and you've thought to yourself,
I wish I'd
or maybe I should have made a lead direction double, or better still, I wish I had been on lead. I just want to give you a quick hand from years ago where this friend of mine got a 10-card heart suit headed by the ace king. And they were admiring that. When the hand on the left opened 6 spades and went past the hand on their right, and they bid 7 spades. And so here they are with their 10-card heart suit that they couldn't bid, and they weren't on lead. And they're thinking, bloody hell, you know, you want to bid 8 hearts, really, don't you?
What are the other suits? Have they got a void in the non-spade suit?
I don't think so, but their partner led ace of diamonds and gave them a rough because they had a singleton diamond. And there were no heart tricks. They really wanted a heart lead. But no, they didn't. Well, they wanted a diamond lead. They just didn't know it. This person who didn't care whether it was right or wrong, she just wanted to be allowed to bid her 10-card heart seat at some stage.
It's really disappointing, isn't it, when you pick up this huge distribution hand and then it gets to you and you can't actually bid anything. It's a bit frustrating.
Whether I've ever heard that situation before or since, we can't even get a bid in at the 7 level.
But the thing about wanting to get a bid in, that's even impressive as well. You would feel wrong, though, wouldn't you?
If the bidding had gone 6 spades pass to you and you held 10 hearts to the ace king, don't tell me you wouldn't at least think about bidding 7 hearts.
That's a hard game, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, I've got one thing that I want to show you. Somebody dumped off a whole lot of books down at the Hamilton Bridge Club, and in them were all these little booklets called The Bridge World. And I picked up a couple, and they go right back to the early 2001s. I wasn't even playing. And this one that I picked up was 2005, October. And at the very top of it, it's got The Scandal at Buenos Aires. And it goes back to 1965 when it looks like they had a cheating scandal in 1965. I was one.
Terence Reese and Boris Shapiro. Let me guess. Terence Reese and Boris Shapiro and the number of fingers they had related to hearts. Is that the one?
That's it. That is it.
There you go. I wasn't there, by the way.
But amazing. They've got some wicked stories. And to think that 58 years later, they're still thinking about different ways that you can do that.
There was a bit of doubt as to whether they actually had been, as there always is, I suppose.
I would have no idea why anyone would want to win something by cheating. Why would you want to do that? You'd know in your heart that you hadn't won. Why would you?
Well, Terence Reese was arguably the best player in the world at that time, and certainly a great author, and he denied, of course. It's a tough one. It's hard enough to figure out now, let alone in 1965.
Well, what gets me is that it's hard enough to play bridge. If you have a whole system of cheating that you have to remember as well, That would be pretty hard, it's, wouldn't it?
I mean, I would probably think that it would be a bit awkward using your fingers to do that.
Yeah, I could not think if you were going to cheat, surely you'd think of something better than holding up the number of fingers you've got related to the number of arches.
I think it was probably quite subtle. I don't think they probably just held up three fingers to say they had three arts.
It could be like a new dance if you took the cards away. Anyway, things have to move on. So we are now at the pond with two froggets and a toad.
Two froggets and a toad. Sounds like the name of a band. Anyway, on that lovely thought, before we start singing, I might leave you.
Join us next week at the Lily Pad
with Pam Livingston, Bridge Coach.
See you.
Una, una.
One thing that is happening, it's coming up to rubber time. I know how much you love rubber. I've already put my entry in.
Oh, well, that'll be when the rubber hits the road.
That'll be good. It is exciting. So if anybody is keen to learn about how to play rubber bridge, it's used to be the thing, didn't it, Barry? Also used to play for money, is that correct?
Yep, that's what rubber was all about. In fact, still is, and obviously in some clubs, not so much in New Zealand, or not at all in New Zealand as far as I know. I don't think there's any rubber bridge clubs over here. Double Bay in Australia, which used to be a lot of money to change hands. I guess it still happens over there. But in the UK, I think it's TGRs or whatever it is. I've never been to either club.
So have a look out for your posters, people. Get into rubber. It's quite exciting. It sort of is a different mindset from the normal game, but still playing bridge. You can't get enough of that. We've got a little episode for you to listen to from Peter Hollins, our friendly YouTube star from across the ditch. Here's a short snippet on what to look forward to.
Do you ever look at suits like this, where you've got king, queen, 10-9-5, opposite 4-low, you're missing the ace jack. You're like, all right, let's lead up to the king, and you lose to the ace. And the next time you get down to the south hand, you lead again. And you're like, should I put in the queen? Should I finesse? Who's got the jack? I don't know. And you just choose something. Or maybe you've got a suit like this, where you're missing the ace, the queen, and the nine. You lead up to the jack, and it loses to the queen. You get back to your south hand. You lead up towards the king and it loses to the ace. You get back to the north hand. You then lead low towards the 10 and the 8. You haven't seen the 9. You're like, all right, do I go to the 10 or do I go to the 8? And you just choose one. Or do you? I want to just give you some knowledge that you can sort of use on a broad spectrum of different suit combinations without actually having to memorize every individual suit combination. And this all stems from a saying that you've already probably heard. 8 ever, 9 never. But I want to flesh it out so that you can use it on suit combinations like that and have the probabilities in your favor. And just win extra tricks just because you know the probabilities without knowing every single suit combination. And there's not a lot of memory work for this as well, so this is nice and simple.
That's us for this week.
Just quickly before we go, just say well done to the Weir team for winning the Gally Pierce themes on the weekend, narrowly from the Livingston team.
All right, thanks everybody, and we shall catch you next week. Enjoy your bridge.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this Free FM podcast. If you want to hear more content like this, you can support Free FM via Patreon. Head to patreon.com/freefm89 to find out more.